This is Reformathy Dispatch. Kevin, we're going to do things a little bit differently today. I thought we'd have a chat, a little extended interview that would flesh out a bit more of the governance reforms that we were alluding to before. Last week, we were talking at length about Police Chief Listio's efforts to overhaul the police and using the Brigadier Jay murders as sort of a way to get into it and the strike while the iron's hot. Clean out some of the bad apples in the police force. I think six have been fired. Six police generals have been fired so far. And there's a racketeering group there, the 303 Consortium or something like that. I think that, you know, viewers, listeners, Indonesianists in general would have expected a little bit more work on governance from the Widodo administration. In 2014, there's probably a lot of high hopes when Widodo came into the presidency that there'd be more effort at reform of criminal justice and the bureaucracy. This feels like a golden opportunity about 18 months before he leaves office. Is that the right way to think about it, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Widodo came into office with a great deal of promise for governance reform because he was really a political outsider, having come up from the district level. He had been head of the Chamber of Commerce at the municipal level in Solo, and then Solo mayor, and burst onto the scene in a surprise win for Jakarta governor in 2012. So his background, his penchant for really prioritizing service delivery to the poor and changing up the way government does business really held a lot of promise for governance reform. And he had some quaint ideas about economic management. So there were concerns, I think, at the time that there might be advances in governance reform during his tenure, but economic management could suffer. In fact, it's sort of been the other way around, as a matter of fact. More or less, it's a kind of a simplification, but basically the economy's done well, but governance has kind of stood still, and democratization and respect for human rights, for that matter, as well. And it's a little bit puzzling because Widodo really does prioritize a better delivery of services to the public, and one of the major obstacles to that is the legal uncertainty and rent-seeking norms throughout the bureaucracy, for example, things that obstruct the efficient conduct of business, basically. So, you know, there's various reasons why it didn't happen, I think, but a lot of it pertains to Widodo's own kind of inclinations personally. But after 8 years in office, now maybe he is finally looking at this more seriously. And I think he has the right police chief in place finally.
Well, we think we've got the right guy to come and talk with us. It's Dr. Laude Syarif. Listeners may remember him. Certainly the journalists might remember him during this time of the KPK. He's with the Partnership for Governance Reform in Indonesia. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what that outfit is? They're a band of advisors, really, for President Widodo, right?
Yeah, that's a donor-funded entity that serves as a resource on providing advice about institutional reform, and goes back a long ways, I want to say 15 years or so, probably. A lot of distinguished alumni, Pat Laude being one of the latest.
Yeah. We're going to grill them a little bit about police reform. Of course, the KPK, and whether it's still an effective graft-busting entity now that it's been folded into the police. And just how important is it for Indonesia to clean up shop? And I'm curious about how Indonesia scores relative to its neighbors. I mean, it did have a reputation for being just awfully corrupt. I'd like to get a sense of where we are now in that spectrum. Is it less corrupt? Is it more? Is it cleaner than its neighbors? What the state of play is. Before we talk to him, of course, Kevin and I are talking now before the interview. I'm curious what you think you might say.
Yeah, the KPK has definitely suffered since 2019 when Widodo appointed an active police general to head it. then it lost its independence from the government too, when the president converted its personnel over to civil servant status. And when the KPK came into existence back in 2003, its original founders insisted that its staff be separate from the civil service so that they can be more independent and professional and have better remuneration and meritocracy. That also weeded out the best people in the KPK or some of the most well-known and most assertive, including Novel Basweydan, a famed investigator, and others like him. And ironically, some of them have been incorporated into the police now as civilian advisors to the Criminal Investigation Directorate, or Bareskrim, in the National Police Headquarters, ultimately under the police chief, Listio Prabowo. So sort of a turning of the tables there. And it's hard to judge the status of corruption, though, because in the past, when the KPK still had its credibility, for example, when Pat Laud was really the standout member of the previous roster of KPK commissioners prior to the change in late 2019, there were revelations constantly coming to light because of KPK cases. So it was possible to sort of see what types of things were going on out there. Under the new chair, Firly Bahuri, the cases are just not as frequent and not as incisive. And so
he's a police general, isn't he? He's a three-star
police general. Yeah, he's now retired, but he was active when he was appointed. That's him, yeah. And so, yeah, the KPK has basically just become almost dormant. And when it does take action, there's lots of suspicions that it's actually being prompted for political agendas. So there's just not a lot of detail that's surfacing. And that's why this sensational police-on-police execution in July involving the two-star general Ferdi Sambo is so sensational, because it has revealed sort of all sorts of indications of serious waywardness.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll leave it there. Coming up, Laudis Yarif. He is the executive director at the Partnership for Governance Reform in Indonesia. Dr. Syarif, from 2015 to 2019, was the commissioner with the Corruption Eradication Commission, or the KPK, as it's more popularly known in Indonesia. He holds a master's degree in international environmental law in Brisbane. He holds a PhD in law from the University of Sydney. He's a friend of the media. He's generous with his time and analysis. Dr. Laude Syarif, welcome to Reformasi Dispatch.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah,
I'm happy to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Partnership for Governance, and what do they expect you to get done there?
Yes, the Partnership for Governance Reforms, or in our Indonesian name, it is Kemitraan, used to be a program of UNDP. It is established after the fall of Suharto to safeguard the reforms agenda, the reformasi agenda of Indonesia. So in the past, we are focusing on establishing electoral commissions, independent electoral commission, KPU, including establishing the judicial commissions, the ombudsman, and of course, the Corruption Eradication Commissions, KPK. Kemitraan was the first who actually tried to initiate the blueprint of the Supreme Court of Indonesia, and also the separation of the police from Tentara Nasional Indonesia, from the military. Since 2010, we are expanding our programming with environment and climate related program. And in 2010 and 11, we are trying to be separated ourselves from UNDP. So we become Indonesian agency now. But we still have very good relationship with UNDP, UNODC, EU, World Bank, and of course, DFAT of Australia. It is one of our main collaborators.
What's your priority agenda items nowadays, Pat Laud?
Yeah, our priority agenda, it is actually, if you look at the decline of corruption perception index of Indonesia from 40 in 2019 when I was in KPK, and in 2020 down 37, and also if you look at the democracy index of Indonesia also down, and some studies conducted by some friend in Australia, especially from ANU and Sydney Uni, for example, the trend of the shrinking of public space, declining of the quality of democracy. So we are always trying to, you know, to work on that issue, because I think this is a priority agenda. So that's why now we are working on, yeah, trying to revive the promise of reformacy. You know, we, because I think we just took it for granted in the past. We are getting better in our democratic, well, the quality of democracy, but actually mostly procedural. We need more substantive kind of like a democracy. And also we want to see better law enforcement agencies and, of course, the eradication of corruption in general, but with specific on corruption in related to law enforcement agencies and natural resources exploitation. So they are actually the main agenda of us now.
What do you think about the election process that's just now starting to unfold? Are you confident about Indonesia's prospects for a good election process in 2024 for the national elections as well as the regional head elections that year? In particular, the support so far for the KPU and also the appointment of interim regional heads for provinces and districts. What are your thoughts on those?
Yes, I think this is from the board of Kemitraan. Actually, we've been actually tasked to look at this closely, especially the preparation of the general election 2024. And we want to have more transparent and accountable general election. And at the same time, we recognize the challenges, especially the, how would I say it politely? I mean, we recognize the challenges, for example, imposed by the current coalition of governments, and I think everybody try to control the narrative of how we are going to do our general elections. So that's why now we are working closely with KPU, electoral commissions, of KPK and including Bawaslu. We are trying to assist them. As basically, our message is clear. We want more transparency and accountability of general election. Similarly, on the appointment of interim Bupati, Wali Kota, and Governor, we also want that the Ministry of Home Affairs, they have also to listen the voices of the people, and actually not only people in Jakarta, but actually people on those provinces and Kabupaten. And it has to be based on our assessment. If they want to appoint someone, they have to appoint someone with very clear record of integrity. It is not someone that's because they have a particular connection with the current government.
Yeah, like a brother-in-law or something. I've got a follow-up question on that. Local governments have usually been the weak link in the chain when it comes to governance reform. What happens in Jakarta doesn't necessarily filter down through to the Bupatis and the like and the mayors. What is your sense of the progress on that? Is that still the case? And what's your prognosis for the future?
Yeah, unfortunately, it is actually still the case. And many governors and head of district, Bupati, and the mayor at provincial and local levels are, if level of transparency and accountability in doing their day-to-day work, it is not yet up to the level and that we wanted. The second, the quality of public services provided by them to the people also need a lot of improvements. So, but this is actually happened. We cannot just blame them, you know, but it is also because of the way the central government or the political party actually control those bupatis and governors to behave, you know. So I think in the short terms, we always focusing on two, basically, especially in how to tackle corruptions. One, it is we always trying to fix the procurement system within district levels and provincial level. The second, licensing process, because that's the two, the two main source of corruption. And the third, actually, which is not many people actually discussing it, the Bupati and the governors and, of course, the mayor should not be given a lot of burdens to give some kind of like upati to political party. You can actually find the better terms to the top level of political party who supporting them. So this is make them even sometimes difficult to work because they have some kind of like liability to serve the political party who actually are supporting them in the candidacy. So that's the main problem in Indonesia.
Yeah, I think former Jakarta governor Ahok Basuki Pratama complained one time that candidates for regional head positions have to buy their nominations in a lot of cases from parties, which points to practices within parties, of which there's only 9, and it doesn't seem like there's new parties cropping up to provide competition for those existing parties. So, yeah, how much of a problem do you see this being for Indonesia in the future? Is there sort of a cartelization of politics by incumbent parties? Is there a need for more competition in the legislative arena from new parties?
I mean, your point for actually, they have actually to buy, actually to pay the political party to be nominated. It is common practice, but they never actually admit it. The second, once you are become a governors or mayors, yeah, of course you have to serve them. So I think this is one of the main root of corruptions in Indonesia. The second, if you look at the Indonesian's political landscape, we never have like real political opposition, right? Like in Australia, you have Labour and you have others. Or like in US, you have Republican and Democrat. Or Labour and Conservative in UK. Here in Indonesia, for example, now at the moment that Partai Demokrat and of course Partai Keadilan Sejahtera, they consider themselves as an opposition to the government because they are an outside the current administration. But sometimes they actually have a coalition for the appointment of mayor and governor. So there is no real political ideology. So this is even actually make it worse. So I think we do not need like more political party if they behave still the same. You know, what I want to see is that the current political party, they have actually to have like very strong ideology. Okay, I want to fight for anti-corruption. I want to fight for environmental protection, for example. Or I want to fight for a better public services. If you look at every political party, they have that, but they behave differently. There is no difference between like Islamic-based political party and what you call it nationalist political party. So in the end of the day, it is actually the same. So that's why I think, but they should not actually, for example, prohibit a good candidate for example, the small political party, they may actually have a better candidate to support for the presidency, for example. Now it is kind of like very difficult because they need at least 20% in my opinion, this is against the principle of democracy itself. Because they want to control it, as you just mentioned. This political party now, it has become kind of like the amalgamations of the politic and the private sector. And they want, really, really want to control it. So that's why now we are a many civil society group or independent academicians now keep voicing on, the oligarchs who are actually trying to control the Indonesian politics and economy. This is not really good for the future of Indonesian democracy.
Have you ever thought of a job in the KPK?
Now? I had enough. For years is actually enough. I made enough enemy during my 4 years terms in the KPK.
It looks like you read the newsletter on a weekly basis. So we're grateful for that. Kevin's been banging on about that for a while now.
Actually, I'm still helping them. Yeah, in fact, now I have like a special project called Integritas. Integritas project, and we actually assisting the KPK on one, the drafting of national strategy, 5 years national strategy on corruption prevention. And the second, we are actually trying to introduce new guidelines for conflict of interest, which is very, very important. And the third one, we are actually trying to improve, as just mentioned previously, licensing system, especially on natural resources based licensing process. So that's we work. Kemitraan will never actually stop working with KPK because it is our baby. So it is no wonder that actually in Kemitraan, senior management since the beginning have the representative Eri Riana for the first commissioner from Kemitraan. And Bambang Wijoyanto and Mas Santosa from Kemitraan, and of course myself. But we do not have representation now at the KPK. Yeah.
Hey, podcast listeners, Jeff here again. For more analysis like this on Indonesian politics, policy, and economics, try a subscription of the Reformasi Weekly Newsletter. Go to reformasi.info for your free 1 month trial.
Yeah, I think the partnership has engaged in programs on reform of the police in the past too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And yeah, there's been quite a lot of overlap with Firly Bahuri, an active police general back in 2019, becoming chair of the KPK, and then personnel from the KPK, including the former police investigator Novel Baswedan from the KPK, moving to help the police. What sort of trends are you seeing in the police under the new police chief, Listio, over the past year and a half or so, and especially with all the revelations happening in recent weeks regarding the Ferdi Sambo case?
Yes, I think before I answer that specific question, I just want, as I mentioned already, that Kemitraan was instrumental in providing a study and for the separation of the police force from the Indonesian military in the past. The second, after that, we actually assisting them in the transparency and accountability on selection process for police cadets at the academy. And the third one, we have very robust project in the past on community policing, including also myself actually training the Indonesian National Police on human rights with the support of the European unions and several others. And during Patito, during Tito Karnavian, he was actually invited me and asking to come up with, because Kemitraan actually produced called Indonesian Governance Index. And he actually want to have like police governance index as a tools to evaluate the work of Polda and Polres, provincial police and district police level. So we have that. We actually doing it yearly. So we have the numbers and things, and we can actually see which aspect of the police actually high and low, for example. And if you're interested, actually, we can actually give you the index so you can actually try to compare it as a background of this if you are interested. And this year, actually, it is a time for us to examine the Mabes Polri. But unfortunately, the Mabes Polri, it is not yet actually doing it, you know, because I think this is the most important ones. We have to examine, try to evaluate about the Mabes Polri itself, not only Polda and Polres level. But to our surprise, with Palistio coming, and he came with the new proposal called Presisi. And now we are actually using the previous police governance index to assist his team.
Okay. Can you explain Presisi?
Yeah. So the Presisi, actually have several components. For example, one of them are trying to have a better response to the complaint and also focusing on the readiness of the human capital of the police and many other components of Presisi, which is actually good. So his team, which is includes some former KPK colleagues now actually in Presisi and assisting him in how to improve by using that police governance index that we actually produce. Now we actually working with also with composers. In fact, just last week we actually have a meeting and how we are going to improve it, and also we help the Ministry of coordinating Ministry of Menko Polhukam and Politik, Law and Security, Pak Mahfud, because the head of Kompolnas actually, Pak Mahfud MD, right? So yesterday they have a conference and how to improve it. And now people actually start talking about this is the Sambo case, the Sambo saga. It's maybe actually good. Mm-hmm. It is a good timing in how we are going to improve the quality and the professionalism of Indonesian national police for this not to happen again in the future. So we've been actually trying to work on it.
So basically never waste a crisis. But do you think that Police Chief Listio will maintain the momentum of the reform that we've seen so far? We've seen some high-profile dismissals. Will that continue?
We actually talked to his team. We should not actually fix this only people involved, I think. We have to take this momentum to fix the general governance of the Indonesian National Police, especially on, especially I think the police is very crucial and how we are going to reform rescript the criminal investigation department of the police, which is actually very, very powerful and significant. That needs to be improved, the quality and response and many other things. The second, also the career path of the police, because we've actually seen it in our index. For example, when I actually they are in the police academy, you can actually see them, which one is a good cadet, the second cadet. But usually when they enter the National Police, merit systems, it is not yet actually utilized to push the best candidate as, to be trusted to manage the Indonesian Police. So we hope that actually Pak Listio, Pak Kapolri, can actually work on this. I think if he can actually do two things, one, fixing the arrest crime in Polda, in Polres, and in, of course, in Mabes Polri, in the headquarters, this is something big. If he want to, leave a legacy. The second, it is actually improving how the merit system can be utilized for the promotion of the career path of good police officer. So this is, if he can actually do this too, and the third one, of course, the complaining of some time of abuse conducted by the police, for example, I think it has to be addressed properly. If he can actually, I may actually have asked too much, but if he can actually do the street aspect, he will be actually remembered as very reforms Kapolri. Yeah,
the fourth one I'd like to add is those blue lights in the cars on the streets and the traffic with the sirens.
Yes. Yeah. Can I have an amen?
Are you worried about political blowback now from the Sambo case and assuming that there's vested interests threatened by police reform, criminal interests or political interest or whatever? Are you worried that that will get back to the political leadership and then Listio will face top-down pressure to slow down or stop any reforms that might be underway?
I think it is depend on the response of the Indonesian government and, of course, Kapolri himself. I think because there's been a rumor, I think maybe a criminal interest actually working within them, I think they have to make it clear. They have to, before, there's like a three component that I mentioned before, this is actually can wait. But this one, it has to be very clear from Pakapoli that we will not to be associated with criminals. If there is some kind of suspicion, they have to make it transparent, and we now do A, B, C, D to address that. If there is, for example, online gambling that actually connected to them, which is we still need to confirm, right? But this is lot of rumors. Even you actually asked me on this. This need to be, the people need clear, strong commitment from the innocent police that, okay, if there is none, then they have to say it. There is none. If there is, for example, the existence of this as the basis of these rumors, then they also need to acknowledge it and respond it forcefully to abolish those. And I think otherwise, as you just mentioned, it may have blowback to them if they, for example, if they do not how to respond to it. And I think this is the time, actually, for Pakapolri to show his leadership and his commitment to fix it and, of course, to answer the rumors from the people.
Yeah, there's that anonymous report about the 303 consortium that emerged after the arrest of Ferdi Sambo mentioned criminality in so many realms, organized prostitution, narcotics, gambling, diesel fuel subsidy manipulation. And another one is illegal mining. And because you are a professor at Hasan Nuding, I think the number one university in Sulawesi, and nickel mining is so big in Southeast and Central Sulawesi in particular, and South Sulawesi. I noticed that the Energy Ministry came out last week and asserted that there are 2,700 illegal mine operations in Indonesia, employing an estimated 3.7 million people. So this is a vast problem. So my question is, I don't really have a question. Sorry. what do you think about that? And do you have any?
No. On natural resources, because I've been working on it. And when I was in KPK, we have a special task force on mining. Not only mining, but natural resources base. And actually, what they are doing now, it is actually the finding of KPK report. To give you the examples. We have more than 10,000 mining licenses in Indonesia, the existing, when I was in KPK. And out of the 10,000, less than 2,000 that actually have a clean and clear license. So the rest, like 8,000, it is actually, partly illegal, or basically we can consider it. If it is actually partly illegal, then it means actually illegal. Why actually this still operating? Because there is, we knew this. We knew this, and we have the study. We knew it because, there is no some kind of like very clear message from the government and how to enforce the mining law, the environmental law, and of course the forestry law, because it is always a land appropriation law, for example. So this is actually the problem. Not all of them you can actually prosecute them under anti-corruption law, because if you want to do that, you need to prove that there is the existence of bribe, for example, and gratification, which is very, very difficult to do and to prove. But those illegal mining, actually, they are actually against the forestry law, environmental law, and mining law itself. So it is very easy to do, very easy to, if you want to stop them. But unfortunately, it is not yet. So that's why I think it is a time for the Indonesian National Police and relevant ministry to strengthen their commitments to stop this illegality. And I don't think they actually need, it is very easy to prove. It is very difficult if you compared it, for example, selling narcotics. It is very difficult to see because nobody actually wants to be seen or proving corruptions or bribe. It is always actually done behind the scene. But you cannot hide very big mining complex. It is very easy, and everybody see it. Everybody see it. So this is actually a time for the Indonesian government to strengthen, because I think the Indonesian government and Indonesian people, we do not hate investments, but we want responsible investment, including mining. Mining, it is to be a responsible mining. It is not just you mine and destroy everything. For example, in Southeast Sulawesi, and in Maluku, for example, based on the Indonesian law, small island cannot be mined. An island that less than 2 million hectares, you cannot mine it. But there are a lot of small island actually mined. And they have like even partial license. So if you actually follow the governor of Southeast Sulawesi, Nur Alam, yeah, they caught him because he got a bribe. When I was in the KPK, so we sent him and he got 12 years in jail. Because, and it is mining on small island. And there is a clear law. You cannot mine small island. But yeah, I don't know why. So you should ask the government, Kevin, for that.
Puck Laude, I wanted, you mentioned the KPK, and you were commissioner there from 2015 to 2019 during a really tumultuous, well, I'm not sure the KPK didn't have a time when it wasn't tumultuous, but nevertheless, you were there, I think, during Budi Gunawan episode, during Novel Buzzwaden's attack, and I think the you may have left just before the amalgamation into the police. I wondered if you could give us sort of a softer question, but I'm curious of your perspective as a commissioner. What was life like for you as an investigator and it's held really in really very high regard? The second part of that is your views of the KPK now and their efficacy as part of the police.
Yes, I mean, attack on Novel. Yeah, I was there. I still remember vividly. I was actually in the palace attending one of the, someone actually inaugurated at that time representing KPK, and suddenly actually I got a call from the office that actually Novel actually attacked in the morning. I got a call in the morning that this actually Novel actually got attacked with acid, but Pak Agus asked me that I go to the hospital and you go to the palace, and from the palace you go to the hospital. They thought because you have to inform the president or the vice president at the time, you know. So I went there and telling them actually Novel will actually attack with acid. So we don't know yet, actually, who is the attackers at the time. But attacks on the KPK, it is not only to Novel, actually. There are several other seniors, investigators that actually, for example, they trying to grab their bag and they push from the motorbike and many other things. And for example, my kids actually follow to their basketball court. But we never say it properly.
Well, your kids are following.
Yeah. And until the, you know, they tried to burn my house with Molotov cocktails. And fortunately, one bottle was not explode. And I think it was because of the prayer of my mom. Yeah, otherwise my house will actually get burned. And Pa Agus, they put, and the same night, they put a bomb in his fence. But hopefully, actually can take it away around, and the special police can actually try to defuse it. You know, I think they rightfully they defuse it. So yeah, there are a lot of things. You know, so it is not easy for being a commissioner. So when you ask me, you know.
Did that deter you, or did that prompt you to drive?
Actually, of course, we have to make more some kind of like security and more vigilance. We add more security, but we knew that I actually never in the KPK, for example, go quietly. Since the first leadership, the second leadership, the third leadership, there was always a drama in the KPK, right? And hopefully the current leadership, they will not actually, they will not actually experience similar things. And I don't really want to comment on the current KPK, but I just hope that actually the level of trust of the people will improve, because in the past we are always number one with more than 80%. And now it is quite worrying. It is quite worrying. So that I hope that the level of trust of the people to KPK will improve up to the level that
when you were working there.
Yeah, the 2000. Before 2020.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Kevin. And my pleasure to talk to you guys.
Yeah, I really appreciate your insights, and talk to you again next time, I hope.
And that's the pod. Our editing and sound engineering is done by Stephen Handoko. Our music is courtesy of the Blue Dot Session. For a free trial of Kevin's Reformasi weekly newsletter, go to reformasi.info. If you're listening to us through a podcast app, you know how this works. Please subscribe to this one and share it on social media. It would be a big help. As always, you can reach us at hello@onthelevel.id. This podcast is a production of On the Level Media. I'm Jeff Hutton. Bye for now.